I'd like to start with some words from our friend Mary Oliver's poem, Evidence, as I think they're helpful images to hold alongside our readings today. Memory, a golden bowl, or a basement without light. For which reason the nightmare comes with its painful story and says, you need to know this. There are many ways to perish or to flourish. How old pain, for example, can stall us at the threshold of function. Still, friends, consider stone that is without the threat of gravity, and water that is without anxiety, and the pine trees that never forget their recipe for renewal. And where are you, with your ears bagged down as with packets of sand? Listen. We all have so much more listening to do. Tear the sand away and listen. The river is singing. Well, the first natural disaster on a national scale that I remember was the Mississippi River flooding in the early 90s. Since then, I've learned that this is the largest scale, most expensive flood in modern U.S. American history. Billions of dollars. Some places submerged for over 200 days that year. But at the time I was 9 years old, and all I knew was that I saw on the nightly news these scenes of frantic levee building, chains of people hefting sandbags along swollen riverside. Then shaky aerial footage of all that muddy brown water coursing through towns and houses, dotting this alien landscape. Roofs that have become makeshift docks. The land swallowed up, so disorienting, as hours turned into days and weeks and months, a new alien world. I just kept thinking, where was all this water coming from? Who had left on the faucet? What did it mean that everything could be swept away like that? And in our Old Testament reading, we hear about the end of the great flood. It's a troubling story of immense violence and vengeance. And this promise that we hear that the waters will never again become a flood to destroy all flesh. In the midst of a year like this, when we are flooded on so many deeply troubling levels, that's a promise to hold on to. Even this summer, on our own Whitney Avenue, corroded pipes burst open and poured sewage into the Mill River. It empties into the Sound just next to one of the plots of land where I farm. A whole week with the smell of filth and dead fish was so at odds with the bright squash flowers, the waving tomato branches flourishing green in the garden. I had a vision of threatening tides creeping over the berm along the riverside, as they've done 7 years ago. I thought about the richness of an ecosystem where fresh water mixes with the salt. I thought about all the fishermen who come each day on the bridges and walk along the edge of the garden for a spot on the shore there to fish. I thought about the white silos of the petroleum plant on the farther shore, and the long deferred cleanup of the Mill River English power plant that for decades has been leaching heavy metals and other toxins into the river. With lead on one side and oil on the other, how does the water win? The season of creation calls us to question our place and function in the order of things. Our relationship to this natural world, but also our right relationships among humanity. These degradations, the environmental ones, are also connected to racial and economic ones. They all have the same roots underneath. We ignore the health of the river just as we ignore the health of our communities. They have the same roots, colonialism, white supremacy, and greed, all intertwine. Just like with the Mississippi River floods, that were preceded by a buildup of rain and snow accumulation in the year preceding. or with the Mill River's long abuse leading to poisoned fish and diseased waters, there is another river swelling, like a ragged seam down the middle of the country. As black men and women are casually murdered, and protest swallows up downtown streets, smashes businesses, violent clashes and the air muddied with tear gas, wails and the roar of our grief unstemmed. The overflow of rage and heartbreak has deep sources, tributaries of pain and violence and injustice that crisscross our long histories. They soak the ground and they swell up. And some of us have put sandbags up, built the banks higher to try to stem and block it from view. We push off the disruption with easy answers, band-aids, make a donation, protest the right way, wait for a new generation. But I think the river is singing, and we are called to listen. In our gospel reading, we see a pair of unexpected and maybe unwelcome messengers. These women, both fearing and in great joy, carrying a message of death overcome. And we know it is rare to see women written as the agents carrying this information to the rest of the disciples. Perhaps in carrying it, they are stepping out of their lane. Would it be easy to dismiss or cast out on the message because it's how it's being delivered? Echoing some of what I've said, some of what I hear nowadays, who are these people? Why can't they say it in some other way, some way more appropriate? From kneeling during the Empire's anthem to burning the Empire's marketplaces, we fail to act because of how the message is delivered or who is carrying it. We miss out on the revelation of God's kingdom. We miss the call to follow the way of Jesus beyond. For white folk like me, who have spent most of our lives insulated from this visceral knowledge and our role in perpetuating these injustices, it's vital to pay attention. Like the poem says, the nightmare comes and says, you need to know this. So one of those messengers for me, one of those women carrying the message, was Diamond Reynolds. 4 years ago, she went to a grocery store and was riding home with her four-year-old and her partner, Philando Castile. And we all know stories like this. They were stopped by police 40 seconds into that interaction. Her partner had been shot 7 times, point blank. And Diamond started filming. She started narrating what had happened and what was happening. And for me, this, of all the other murders at the hands of police, this was the messenger who finally got to me, who I allowed past my defenses and refusals to see and to feel, to comprehend. The floodgates were smashed open for me, and the mental blocks swept away. A gun and a permit to carry it didn't save him. A four-year-old in the back seat didn't save him. Politeness and following the rules didn't save him. And Diamond bore witness, and she brought this message of unjustified death and the bias that fuels it. But state-sanctioned violence and death isn't the end of the story. Not in the gospel and not today. And that brings us to the second messenger I want to talk about. Activist Kimberly Jones, who was filmed while documenting the Atlanta protests this year following George Floyd's murder in May. She gave an insightful analysis, laying out the connections between the economic disparities today and the way the U.S. American system was built and has functioned to extract wealth at the cost of Black folk, how even now the system extracts wealth and undermines self-determination. I thought about the Mill River when I heard her speak. Between racial discrimination and violence on one side and economic exploitation on the other, just like that water poisoned by greed, she asked the question, how can we win? And she puts the drive to disrupt and to loot in a broader context. She finishes this speech by saying that they are lucky that what Black people are looking for is equality and not revenge. And that's where the message turns to joy for me. Because in our gospel reading, we hear that the women go forth with this message, both in terror and fear, but also in great joy. Because what Kimberly Jones is saying, that distinction, that what we're looking for is equality and not revenge, puts everything in a different light. For folks of privilege who the system has benefited, this moment, this flood, can feel threatening. It can feel like the revengeful devastation of the flood in the Old Testament, or the Mississippi out of its banks. It would be easy to let the threat overwhelm us and deafen us to what this moment is really about. The river is singing, and it is a song of equality, of death and violence overcome, of a new kingdom come to life. Maybe we can learn to see that rather than the threatening waters of the flood, this is instead the river of the city of God we hear about in the book of Revelation, fertilizing the tree which ever bears the fruit of equality and justice. So what do? Hearing these messengers proclaim violence and death and this invitation to new life, what do we do now in this year when we are all flooded by our own griefs? We've all lost something this year. Personal losses, deaths, the weight of the human rights violations, authoritarian rise, and recognizing the economic and racial injustice that underpins all of it. What do? I say, don't put another sandbag on the levee. Don't resist or try to flee. I grew up being warned that sin would take you farther than you want to go, make you stay longer than you want to stay, and make you pay more than you want to pay. But now, I really believe that that's also true of the way of Jesus, especially for people who have benefited from empire as it is. Transformation, sanctification, discipleship has a true cost, a commitment that's not easy to maintain or predictable. It takes us beyond the bounds. It makes us unexpected messengers of new life beyond. So if you find yourself in the river this year, follow the advice for when you fall into troubled waters. Whitewater rapids or murky debris-strewn floodwaters, surrender and listen. In the panic, our instinct is to fight against the current, to try to get out by finding your footing, putting your feet down. But that resistance leads to drowning. It's too easy to get trapped in rocks or debris, and the current will pin you under. Instead, they say float. Lie face to the sky and let the water carry you. And when there's calmer water or an obstacle that you can climb on, that's when you can power forward and swim. The poem that we started with earlier concludes like this. Mary says, "For myself, I've walked these woods for more than 40 years, and I am the only thing, it seems, that is about to be used up. First, though, I want to step out into some fresh morning and look around and hear myself crying out, 'The house of money is falling. The house of money is falling, and the weeds are rising. The weeds are rising.'" There's a comfort in knowing that the story is larger and longer lasting than us, that maybe we're the only things about to be used up, and the kingdom is a bigger thing. And I hope in this upheaval that the greed that feeds these systems, the house of money, as Mary Oliver calls it, is swept off its foundations. And in that newly fertile soil, the weeds may rise up. Just like on that farm down by the Mill River, delicious chickweed and amaranth and lamb's quarters and wood sorrel that I have there, the unlooked for nourishment, the messengers of a new kingdom beyond the bounds. I want to see this muddy, swollen mess transform into the crystal ribbon of life that feeds God's kingdom. That's where I see the promise of great joy in all of this news beyond the terror. So in this moment and beyond, the questions I leave us with are, where do we need to soften and float, to tear away the bags of sand and listen? Who are the unconventional, unexpected messengers trying to deliver you terrifying yet joyful news? Where does that message call you to put your power to work, to pull for a new shore, to sweep away the fallen house of money and make room for a fertile kingdom to rise?